This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, a warning that millions in the DRC are facing hunger, and combating human trafficking and irregular migration in Libya is a challenge for the whole region. But first, international human rights experts monitoring Burundi have seen no sign of positive change in the country in recent months. That's according to a report commissioned by the UN Human Rights Council into allegations of ongoing grave abuses in the Great Lakes state. In June, UN investigators highlighted the climate of fear and violence in Burundi linked to President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to stand for a third term in office. Alpha Diallo has been speaking to Fatsa Uwergugez, head of the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi.
Since the last June, where the Commission made its oral declaration at the Human Rights Council, we received no sign of positive evolution of the situation in Burundi, in particular as far as the restriction to freedom, certain freedoms are concerned. We expressed some concerns concerning lots of allegations of violation of human rights, but also concerning the restriction of the political field and the exercise of freedom of expression, for example, of association. But we haven't received any signs of positive evolution. On the contrary, we have received some testimonies since June showing that there's a kind of the tendency that we have underlined in June is persisting. The signals that we have received through those testimonies are for us clear evidence that the situation is not improving since June.
But how can the expert of the Commission manage to work well in the absence of cooperation with Burundian authorities?
The Commission, actually, we don't have cooperation, as you just underlined. We could have worked better if we had access to the territory of Burundi, but we have managed to collect very large amount of testimonies, more than 470 testimonies, and collected not only in the neighboring countries of Burundi, but in other countries, but as well as in Burundi through our various sources. So we managed to conduct our activities in a rather effective way.
When you talk about reliable information, how can you collect them in the absence of access in Burundi? Is this an investigation only based on testimony of refugees?
Not only on refugees. As I mentioned, there are also people within the territory who are still in Burundi that we were able to hear through, we have various means of communication, but the bulk of the witnesses are outside Burundi, of course, in the neighboring countries, but also in Europe.
Why it is important to consider all human rights violation in Burundi and how this work of the Commission can be useful in the fight against impunity?
But this is very important for a Commission to collect information. First, on the basis of our conclusions and recommendation, it will allow the government to take positive action. But of course, the action cannot be positive in the absence of an independent and impartial judicial system. So it's up to the government of Burundi to take action and to strengthen its judicial system.
Around 7.7 million people in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, face acute hunger, a 30% increase over the last year. The warning comes in a report released by the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and the World Food Program, WFP. Hunger is on the rise due to escalating and prolonged conflict and displacement in central and eastern DRC, mainly in the Kasai and Tanganyika regions, where there has been widespread violence. In the Kasai region alone, some 1.4 million people have been forced to flee their homes over the past year. Violence in the area has reached disturbing levels because of a spike in ethnically motivated attacks, according to the UN mission in the country, MONUSCO. One of the displaced, Agnes Lupetu, lost all six of her children in a fire that also destroyed her home. She has visible burn injuries.
My six children were burnt alive in my house. My husband fled, but I do not know if he's dead or alive. I received some traditional treatment for my injuries in Kamonia.
Another internally displaced person, Chitita Gode, lost her parents and all her property in the violence. She had to flee her home. She walked in the bush for a week until she met her uncle, who took her to his home.
My parents were murdered in their bed. The militiamen cut up their bodies, covered them in straw, and poured gasoline over them before setting the house on fire. I ran away. Some people were decapitated and dismembered. Many parents were unable to take their children with them.
Chitita started planting after she received a plot of land and vegetable seeds provided by FAO. She's now planting spinach, okra, and eggplants. FAO's providing vegetable seeds and hand tools to rapidly boost food production and increase the availability of nutritious foods among displaced and hosting communities. Moise Muhindo is the head of FAO's office in Chikapa.
Mais nous avons des ressources limitées qui ne pouvaient atteindre et servir que 5000 ménages.
We have limited resources enough to support 5,000 families. Now, in and around the town, there are 70,000 people in need. That's 12,000 families, so we have a gap of not being able to provide agricultural support to 7,000 families.
FAO and its partner WFP are calling for an urgent increase in humanitarian aid, as well as seeds and tools, so that farmers can plant again and regain their livelihoods. It's important to view migration in Libya not just as an internal problem, but as a regional issue. That's according to Maria do Valle Ribeiro, deputy head of the UN mission in the country, UNSMIL. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, recently reported that the North African country is the preferred jumping-off point for refugees and migrants hoping to reach Europe, even though the journey is dangerous. Ms. Ribeiro spoke to Eleuterio Givane about conditions in the region that favor human trafficking and what the UN is doing to combat this challenge.
The United Nations has been accompanying the situation of people finding themselves in a situation of illegal migration and being more vulnerable to trafficking, and also working with the Libyan authorities to ensure that the care being provided is more adequate and more in keeping with the international norms. This is continues to be a major challenge. You know, when you look at trafficking, you have to look at what are the conditions that actually favor trafficking. That's why it's important to look at migration in Libya or illegal migration through Libya, not just as an internal Libyan problem, but as a regional issue. And the importance of addressing, particularly, for example, in the south of Libya, which borders the desert areas of Algeria, Mali, Chad, and Niger, to look at the economic dynamics which favor trafficking and to look at ways of working with those communities to provide alternatives.
Can you talk about the main favorable factors for trafficking in Libya?
First of all, to bear in mind that the trafficking through the Sahel and Sahara region is not new, but some of the situation at the moment is, if you look at the lack of border control, the lack of implantation of the state of Libya in large parts of the south of the country, the lack of services, the lack of other economic opportunities, and, you know, how do you create poles of economic interest which draw people away from having to encourage or favor an economy based on trafficking?
What opportunities does Libya have to overcome this problem?
Libya has one major big opportunity, that it has lots of resources. Even if, in terms of its capacity to use these resources at the moment, is very challenged because of weak institutions resulting not just from the current conflict, but also from lack of development of these institutions during the 40 years of Gaddafi's reign. It also has seen a deterioration in the public service and also in the more decentralized institutions. So one of the big challenges is how to create the conditions that Libya can start using its resources to better stabilize the country and also to better govern what it has and improve the situation and lives of citizens.
You've been listening to UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter under UN Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.